broadcast of the Economic Club of Indiana Speaker Series is made possible in part by ProLiance Energy. ProLiance, adding power to energy. Information is at ProLiance.com.
The opinions and commentary expressed in the following presentation do not reflect the views of this station, the Economic Club of Indiana, or the Economic Club's agents or sponsors. Welcome to the Economic Club of Indiana. Today we feature Allison Melancton, perhaps the busiest woman in town for many months, as president and CEO of the 2012 Indianapolis Super Bowl Host Committee.
Today's luncheon may not be exactly a coronation, but it's pretty darn close. It definitely is community-wide thank you to a lady whose remarkable leadership during the whole Super Bowl experience greatly enhanced our city's reputation as a site for major sports events. Perhaps an Indianapolis Star editorial said it best on the day before the great game. Let me quote it. Allison Melancton, president and CEO of the host committee, has overflowed with creativity, vision, supreme organizational skills, and calm assurance ever since she was hired for the job in 2008. To say that this city and region owe her a deep gratitude doesn't sufficiently underscore the scope of her achievement. Allison brought more than 25 years of national and international experience in sports and events management to the Super Bowl planning, and her expertise was displayed admirably every step of the way. Allison moved to Indianapolis in 1983 when USA Gymnastics relocated from Texas to Indianapolis. She became Senior Vice President of Events with the Indiana Sports Corp and has directed numerous events, including the Olympic Trials, the Women's NCAA Basketball Championship, and the Big Ten Men's and Women's Championships. She's worked at 7 Olympic Games, 4 as an associate producer for NBC Sports, where she won 4 Emmy Awards for her work. But her Indiana legacy is now well established by superb management skills over the last 4 years, culminating in what most and many are describing as the most successful Super Bowl in the history of the event. Before turning it over to Allison, let's take a look at this short video highlighting a normal day in her life leading up to the big event, produced here by our friends at WFYI.
We've said since the beginning that this Super Bowl for Indianapolis, Indiana was going to be more than just what happens in the football field.
We always try to think out of the box. The leadership in volunteers and in staff always feels like we need to be leading the sports industry. And ever since the 1982 Sports Festival and the 1987 Pan Am Games, we've always pushed ourselves to the edge and said, you know, can we do this? Well, there's no question in my 30 years of doing major events in all places in the world that the Legacy Project is my favorite thing I've ever worked on. And it goes back to the people. And we could not get this project done without the people that are there doing it. They have heart and energy to no end. And they, as progress has continued, I keep thinking, maybe they're going to run out of energy. But it's just continued to energize everyone the more that gets done. And I will tell you, the NFL said to us, we've never done anything like that, and are you sure you want that strategy? And we said, yes, it's important to us. And Hoosiers are so humble, we don't frequently use the megaphone and shout to the world about all the great things that we do here, and so we're going to let the Super Bowl do that. And in this event, I feel like we've got, you know, 10 or 20,000 people all standing in a circle holding hands saying, we're going to figure out how to get it done. And that group of folks is working hard every single day in the Super Bowl office, from their homes, from their jobs, because that's what Hoosiers do. And then I drive down here and picture the zip line above us, because that's where it's going. Hi, guys. All of our staff are Hoosier-based people. We felt like educating ourselves on what we needed to do for Super Bowl was easier than getting someone and bringing them here and educating them on what community involvement is here. So tomorrow we're planning to announce that ESPN's on the plaza. Japanese television is sending a crew. What I'm trying to figure out is what my next step should be.
So we're just
You're going to go to heaven for that. It's very likely that none of us will ever work on another Super Bowl.
Hi, look at you.
I want to make sure everybody enjoys it, even though it's long hours and stressful.
You're like Santa Claus.
I am.
You know what? I don't waste a minute, because I don't have a minute.
This is going to be our home away from home. Pretty quick. Fits and the Tantrums.
They're very popular.
They are?
Yeah, they are.
They're not?
I like that name.
Okay. I don't get out much. Okay, that's really funny. Made my day. You've been wearing your scarves? You guys been wearing your scarves?
Yes, I have. Hello again, everyone, and welcome back to Colts Up Close. Let me try that again.
Congratulations on all you've done.
Thanks.
Just keep going.
Yeah.
You're almost there.
I know it. I was a gymnast in college. What I learned was dedication and hard work produces results.
But I'm 100% sure there's going to be a lot of things that are going to come along every day we haven't planned for. And, you know, that's going to be testing all our troubleshooting skills and, you know, our ability to work through a plan one step at a time. Are you guys still following me? You know what? It's going to be a long night, and I bet I have more stamina than you do. I've got to go home and do 200 or 300 emails. I've got 5 contracts to review and a project that's due to the NFL tomorrow, so it's going to be a long night. You're welcome to hang with me, but I bet you're done for the day.
Please join me in offering a warm Economic Club of Indiana welcome to a lady who has deserves all of our respect and gratitude, Allison Melancton.
Thank you very much. Those of you who know me know that I tear up a lot. So you guys got me all teary before I get started talking. So give me a second. Okay, 23 days post-Super Bowl. Lots happened in the last 6 weeks here, and including the last 23 days. And I think the most frequent question I get right now is, and as a matter of fact, the card already came up here, why are you still here? Why are you still here? I think Bill gave me this. Why are you in India and not on a beach somewhere? So I'll answer that. I'm going to a beach, but not quite yet. We had a couple weeks of tear down, and wanted to get the streets all reopened for everybody so that we could all get to work a little easier. But 23 days post, I have some thoughts and reflections I wanted to share with you, and I will take some questions at the end. And happy to answer any question. I don't filter them too much. Steve's going to do that for me. Okay, Super Bowl. Hold on. There we go. One of the things that has been surprising to me in the last 23 days is the letters that we're getting in the office by the hundreds of people that are complimenting us and pointing out different successes for us that I think we probably also know on our own, but in reading them from other people's letters has been really, really fascinating and invigorating. And one of the things, it's when you leave somewhere and you had a great experience, that's great, but you don't usually, at least I don't usually, then write a letter. Take the time to sit down and write a letter and say how much you enjoyed the experience or things that were important to you. And I'm serious, we've gotten hundreds and hundreds of letters. So in reading the letters, I pulled some of these things together for you. The positive national and international media coverage has just been spectacular for Indiana. And we keep trying to find a reporter that's trying to write something negative about his experience or her experience in Indianapolis, and we can't find one. So that's good and very unusual. Certainly economic impact, we don't have the numbers in yet, but I, of course, expect it to be significant. I think our statewide outreach and our resident engagement, that was one of our goals early on, to make sure we engaged as many residents and as many programs as we could across Indiana, and I think we did that well. Positive impact and results on the Near East Side Legacy Project, global impact of SuperCure, identification and deployment of new civic leaders. Early on, we made it a goal to make sure that as we were conducting the Super Bowl, we were trying to groom a new group of leaders that would be involved civically going forward throughout the state, and not just in sports, but all the other civic activities. And I think we've done that and found some great folks that we're going to push forward and out in the spotlight. The numerous community programs that we did, the execution of the village, and the NFLX attendance records. I'm going to say a couple things about that. And then, you know, the NFL has been really good to us in their compliments and their praise of our execution. So I think even for them, we exceeded their expectations. This is an interesting slide for me. I tried to put together just the key national broadcasts that came from Indianapolis. There's others, certainly CNN and Fox Business News and so forth, but these groups came here and had multiple hours, and we taped everything, and we've been sitting down and watching it, and it's really been remarkable the great things that people are saying about Indianapolis, the on-air broadcasters. Even the Weather Channel said great things about us. So that was great. And certainly Jimmy, if 3 years ago, if you told me the Weather Channel was going to center from Indianapolis and say great things about us, I would have doubted you, but they did. Jimmy Fallon, if any of you stayed up that late, I couldn't, but I taped them. Really great, great things about our community. And he was out there and got involved and went in the village and did the zip line and did all those great things. So for all the young folks that were across the country watching his show late, he had a lot of wonderful things to say about us. I put together some of the top media quotes. One of the things last year in Texas, unfortunately, they had significantly bad weather for Texas, and they were caught a little off guard in their weather planning. And one of the things that really buried them was the media coverage there. And I know Peter King was not from Sports Illustrated and NBC Sunday Night Football was not kind in his comments to them. So we reached out to Peter early and said, we know you're coming to Indy. You know, anything you need, come see us. We want to make sure that you have a great experience here. And had some interaction with him during the week, but he made my day on game day, because as I was walking to the game, he was coming, we were walking towards each other, and he gave me a huge hug, and he said, no matter what happens at the game, you guys have done a great job, and this was the most successful Super Bowl I've ever been to. So that was a great thing. He's like a little bit of a Pied Piper with the media. Whatever his attitude is, carries like dominoes. So that was fantastic. The epicenter of awesome, our village, Super Bowl Village. We had over 1 million people that went through the village. I don't know how many of you have seen the great show WFYI did, and I believe they showed it the night before game day, called Naptown to Super City. If any of you saw that, raise your hand. It was absolutely unbelievable. What a great show, and I think they're going to re-air it. Those of you who didn't see it, make sure you look it up. Anyway, there's a couple pictures here that make me think about that show, Naptown to Super City, and sort of the 35 to 40-year sports development here over the years. But that picture there on the left, that is the gorgeous picture and epicenter of awesome, makes me really realize how far along that we have come. The zip line. We had 10,000 zippers, and that was really encouraging to us, because in the meeting that we had before they actually started setting it up, they told us they'd had 1 million zippers and no accidents. So we thought that was great, and so did our risk management committee, and we went through our whole week with no accidents. This was probably the one thing we underestimated the popularity of. We copied the idea from the Vancouver Olympics. There were people that stood in line for hours and hours in Vancouver, and we were aware of that, but we probably didn't expect people to stand in line for 9 hours here, and they did. The weather could have been a factor for that. If it was 20 degrees out and sleeting, I'm not sure as many people would have zipped, but if we ever do it again, or if other groups in town do it, we're going to advise them to really extend the hours and keep it up, because it was something that people truly, truly enjoyed. I had the opportunity to zip with Gary Brackett and Mark Miles, and then a 78-year-old woman named Ruth Shaw from the Near East Side. And I was a little skeptical about it, and I had little butterflies in my stomach. But as I was walking up the seven flights, I was thinking about Ruth being 78 years old and Gary Brackett and Mark, and I knew I couldn't back down at any point and walk back down, because they would never let me forget it. Although one person did do that, and you probably saw it on ESPN, Chris Carter, one of their broadcasters, walked all the way to the top on camera and then decided he wasn't going to go, and he went all the way back down. And they are continuing to, I just saw it again the other day, the poor guy, it's got to have played 100 times for that. So, but you know what? I admire him for getting up there and saying, I'm not going to let peer pressure make me do it. But anyway, the zip line was a great experience for those of you who got to do it. And one of the volunteers was working the zip line, and they told me that a person came up to him and offered him $800 cash to cut the line. And that, you know, on the side, no one would know, just stick it in your pocket. And of course, our great volunteer said, absolutely not, get to the end of the line. NFL experience. We broke the all-time record for NFL experience with the Super Bowl, which was a great feeling. The highest number they had before, I think, was 203,000, and we had 265,000 people. So we didn't just break it, we smashed it. And the convention center was a great venue for the NFL experience, and a lot of kids' activities and youth participation in there. It was just the center of energy. So we were thrilled that we got to break the record numbers. We like to do that with the NFL, break all their records. That is my favorite picture I think I've seen so far of the Super Bowl. It shows certainly a lot of the graphics and a lot of the color in the morning light, evening sunset. There could have been that many people out there in the morning, but I don't think so. Anyway, this picture really makes me think about the whole 4 years of planning. And the picture has a lot of color, and our 4 years of planning had a lot of color and a lot of hard work in the village, and I just think it's a great representation of our city, so that's why I put that in there. And Georgia Street. The city has an amazing asset going forward with Georgia Street, and all of us need to make sure that as the planning continues for Georgia Street, it's used as much as possible and can be a real center of energy for downtown. You saw the number earlier. We had over 1 million people on Georgia Street during that 10-day period, and some of the days we know were really overcrowded. I think the warm temperatures led to more families coming downtown. And interestingly, at 9 and 10 o'clock every night, I would walk through the village, and I saw tons and tons of families with strollers and small kids, so it was people of all ages that were enjoying the village. One funny quick village story, as there were a lot of people, the logistics of getting the bands in and out and in and out down by Pennsylvania Street in front of the field house. It was very congested down there, and we had a couple of our staff members on radios, and the next band was coming in, and they were in a white bus. So the white bus came down Penn, and we said, that's the bus. So the police moved the barriers and pulled everybody aside. It took about 25 minutes to get the bus in and parked inside the barricades and so forth. And then the door opened, and the folks started getting out, and we said, go this way. This is the way you go to the back of the stage. They said, oh, no, we're just looking for the slippery noodle. We're here to party. So it was the wrong white bus. But it was a bus of a band that played the night before at the state fairgrounds, and they had heard all about the village, and they wanted to come down, so we showed them Hoosier Hospitality and made them park right in the center. Yeah. So we showed them where the slippery noodle was, and they went there. Okay, this is probably the most iconic picture from our Super Bowl, which is absolutely wonderful. I will tell you that we were challenged with the NFL to get them to approve doing the cars, and we worked for 6 or 8 months on them to really express that it was part of our history here, and we really wanted to put the Super Bowl team, the NFL franchise teams on the cars, and they did agree in the end, obviously, and I'm so glad we did it. We had the cars then deployed on all different parts around in our Super Celebration sites, and we actually had a guy fly here from France who was a race car fan, and he went to every single car around the community and got his picture taken with him, and then he flew back to France. He didn't come for the game or anything. He just came to see the cars, which was fantastic. And then the Roman numerals at the end there, those are the NFLs, and they travel at each Super Bowl, and each city tries to put them in a place where they're going to get the most pictures taken, and I certainly think that we did that here with them at the Circle. They were 30 feet high and incredibly heavy. 2 years, I guess 2016 is the 50th Super Bowl, so they're just going to have an L, right? Just an L. So I'm glad we got one that had four big letters. Because an L can mean other things. I don't want that. Okay, a couple fun facts. We asked St. Elmo's how much shrimp they sold, because I thought that would be interesting. 2 tons of shrimp in 10 days. The Rams sold 245 kegs of house-brewed beer and 6,000 howlers. I haven't had a howler before, but that's what they call them. Steak and Shake sold 31,000 beef patties and over 1,000 gallons of shake. So there was a lot of food and beverage consumed. And then the second one there, Ruth Chris broke the single-day sales record on Saturday for any Ruth Chris in the world. Isn't that unbelievable?
Yeah.
Okay. A lot of food that was consumed here. Community programs. As I said on the video, and we've been saying for 4 years, we really wanted this to be much, much more than the game. And every time we added another program, I know the staff and some of our committees were saying, you know, we've got so much on our plate, let's not add another program. But then we'd sit and talk about it and say, this is an opportunity we can't miss. So we'll find somebody, we'll find committees to help us do them. And just to highlight a couple of them, the mural program that the Arts Council did was unbelievable. They did 46 murals really in 4 months across our community and engaged the artists and volunteer painters and children in a way that I couldn't even imagine when they launched the program. So that was really something special for our community. Super Scarves. The idea came about four years ago, on engaging people in non-traditional ways. And we had a lot of people that were trying to help us do things with the Super Bowl that we weren't ready for volunteers yet. So when I talked to Mark Miles about it, I know many of you know Mark, I said, you know what, we have this idea, and we want to have people knit scarves for the Super Bowl. And his exact quote to me, Mark, are you here before I embarrass you? Okay, he's not here. You can tell him because I've said this to him anyway. He said, Super Bowl and knitting don't go in the same sentence. And I said, okay. I said, so what can I do to convince you this is a good idea? And at the time, Ann Mertlow, who is here, was his board chair at CICP. And he said, I tell you what, because I tried for 45 minutes to convince him. And he just kept saying, I don't think it's a good idea. He said, if you call Ann Mertlow and Ann thinks it's a good idea, you can do it. So I called Ann and I said, I'm going to run this by you. What do you think? And she said, I'm a knitter. Go for it. So thank you, Ann. So anyway, we got 13,000 scarves. That's right. Good job, Ann. So we had a lot of people tell us we were crazy to get 8,000, and we ended up with 13,000 from 46 states and from four different countries. So it really was a great success, and I know many of you were volunteers and have those as keepsakes. Super Kids, Baskets of Hope, really great program that Tony Dungy chaired, and we're hoping that Baskets of Hope will be a program that continues with every other Super Bowl going forward. We're working with the NFL right now to do that. So in the 4 days of Super Bowl weekend, 7,000 baskets were distributed to sick kids in children's hospitals all across the country in NFL franchise cities, and the baskets were delivered by players of those teams. Great program, and I'm hoping, as I said, that it goes forward. Super Kids, Super Welcome. This was absolutely the most tweeted thing during the Super Bowl, if you can imagine that. We had 36,000 welcome cards in the hotel rooms of people that arrived from out of town. And every sports writer, if you go back and look at the tweets, they all got in their room and said, what a nice touch that we have a greeting card from an elementary school student in Indiana. So those were great. We got 36,000. First in Green, we did a lot of focus on environmental programs, school programs. We had 200,000 kids in all 92 counties participate in our school programs. We had 412 emerging businesses, minority and women-owned businesses that were involved in our program. And then we did a program called XLVI Faces. And if you haven't seen it yet, you should go on our website pretty quick before we shut it down. This was a really interesting project that actually Jim Walker from Big Car had this idea. And we went and found 46 Hoosiers whose lives intersected with the Super Bowl. They weren't necessarily a volunteer, not necessarily a committee person, but in some way their life was impacted by the Super Bowl. And more national media called me about Faces than anything else. And several of them said, these little Faces vignettes you've got on your website are windows into the soul of a Hoosier. And I thought, that's really interesting. That's a great thing. So then, of course, I went and looked at all of them again to make sure it was all good, all great things they were talking about. But they were great. And it was 46 people that, as I said, intersected some way with us, and really remarkable people. And NBC Sports looked at the faces and picked six people that they interviewed in their pregame show. And NBC told me they have never known, their network hasn't, and they didn't believe CBS or Fox had ever done a pregame feature on host committee programs. So that was a big win for us. So XLVI Faces was one of our key projects. Projects that will leave a significant legacy here. The Near East Side Project, I know we've got a lot of press about that, and many of you in this room have been involved with it, and that's going to continue. The Near East Side is not done rebuilding itself, and those of us who were involved are going to continue to be involved because it's such a great project for that community. And the NFL The only thing they require of a legacy project in the bid is that they will match $1 million with their $1 million towards something that's youth education oriented, and typically it's a youth education center, which is called a YET in their vocabulary, YET Center. So we turned that into an $11 million building with again, many help from many of you in this room funded that. But what a remarkable asset that Tech High School has and the Near East Side has from that project. So that's been a great legacy project for us. The NFL told us they have never been involved in a project with an entire neighborhood, the housing, the business corridor redevelopment, and so forth. So that was a big feather in our cap as well. Super Cure, our breast cancer project, we really stepped out of the box on this one. There hasn't been a project like that with a Super Bowl before either. The reason it was so unique here is because of the breast tissue center collection here at IU Simon Cancer Center. And the folks there just wrapped their arms around this project. And the week of Super Bowl, we had 700 women donate breast tissue the weekend before Super Bowl. And half of those donations were diverse. And it was a great project. So that will be continuing. The tissue bank will have a life after the Super Bowl, which is great. And then the Georgia Street renovation that will continue to be an asset for the city. That project was an $11 million project. $8 million of it was a federal grant that was given to the city, and then some additional funds from the city. Okay, volunteers. I can't say enough about our volunteers. Of all the letters that we've gotten, and I'm trying to put them all in a scrapbook, the biggest theme is volunteers, how incredibly friendly, well-educated, and helpful the volunteers were. And that is not necessarily the history with Super Bowl host cities. There's been challenges in the past in communities trying to get volunteers and retain them. And not only did we have our volunteers sign up, we had them attend training sessions. They had a big orientation with us. They had an orientation with the NFL. They went to an individual training session. And they also all did the Super Service online training. So that's a lot to ask from people, and the results absolutely showed. We, you know, I was watching Channel 13 one morning, I think it was game day morning, in the office, and there was a person from New York that was tailgating in one of the lots, and they were asking him, you know, how's your morning going, Super Bowl Sunday? And he said, great, but I'm out here cooking and I forgot my hot sauce. I don't have any hot sauce. So he's kind of crabbing about that. And then 5 minutes later, they went back to him, and 10 people had found this guy and given him hot sauce. I thought, okay, some volunteer had hot sauce in their fanny pack. I mean, how could you do that? So, but it's such an example to me of, you know, somebody needs something, say it, and someone here is going to help you find it. So that was great. Our volunteers were amazing on Monday, the day after the game. They were as amazing on Monday as they were on Sunday, and everybody knew, all the folks that had to get people out of town. We had over 100,000 people exiting Indianapolis that had to leave. So people, it wasn't over when the game was over. People gave it another 24, 48 hours and performed incredibly. That's just some more great quotes. Adios, Indy, you crushed it was probably my favorite. Factors that led to our success, there's a lot more than these, but I think these are the things that really set our path for us. Fully funded host committee from 133 Indiana companies. Many of you in this room are involved in companies and were decision makers in the funding for the host committee. New Orleans and New York tried to raise money the way we did after when they were in their bid process and did not succeed doing that. And Phoenix just tried to do the same thing, and they can't. This is an amazing community. For us to be able to raise the money to do the Super Bowl here in our own state, privately funded with 133 companies, is an entirely new model that the NFL does not know what to do with. They have started changing all of their language and bid specs and so forth going forward because we did it different than everybody else, and we did it a way that it works in Indiana. So I want to thank all of you who were involved in those decisions. And not only did the majority of the companies fund us financially, they gave us volunteers, they gave us great ideas, they helped us with our Clean and Green City Day, they helped us with the parks. So this was an all-in proposition. And if your company was willing to get involved with their people as well as their money, we embraced you and welcomed you. So thank you so much for that. Close collaboration with key partners and stakeholders. There is not another city in this country that works together like this community does. And I know that because I've lived other places and I've worked a lot with host committees over the last few years. Mel Raines from our staff is here, and she and I are going to meet with the New York folks next week, and then Phoenix is sending a delegation here to meet with us on Monday, the following Monday. The problem is when we explain to them what the recipe is here for success, they don't get it because they don't live in a community that works together well. Between the city and the state and all the organizations and the cults and so on and the venues, you know, we're all on the same page. And I knew that before the Super Bowl, but I know it more now. Everybody can, we can get together and collaborate and work through any problem at all in this community, and we shouldn't take it for granted because it's not like that anywhere else in this country. Certainly our compact celebration area and Super Bowl, yeah, we should do clap for that. Certainly the downtown convenience set well with the Super Bowl Village concept. We had 60 planning committees. We had volunteers on committees, and again, many of you in this room, for 2 years that were meeting every week or every other week to help us with our planning. You can't do it with 35 staff people. So we had a structure that worked. We had a commitment and dedication of 8,000 volunteers. I think the diversity of our programs, including all ages, all different types of folks, non-traditional football fans, I think that was helpful to us. The outreach and cultivation of the national and international media. We took the offense instead of the defense. And 4 months out from Super Bowl, we started contacting every media that we thought was going to come here, whether they'd made the decision or not, and said, when you get to Indianapolis, we've got an attaché person for you to work with. I saw Myra. Myra Borshoff is in here, and she helped me tremendously with that program and just really gave us great wisdom and great outreach. And so they were already our friends before they got here because we took the time to welcome them and make sure they had what they needed. I can't say enough about the Colts and Mr. Irsay, especially after the stories I heard from Texas. Mr. Irsay is a great owner, and he loves this community. Lucas Oil Stadium was fantastic for the Super Bowl. The NFL raved about it. They thought the building worked perfectly. There was some questions early on. There was going to be some pinch points, but you know what? The signage was great, and the stadium worked really, really well. So that was wonderful. And then certainly our host committee staff. I have a couple of you here. Tony Mason, I saw over there. Susan Boffman, I think, at that table. Mel Raines. Anybody else here? Okay, we had an incredible staff, and they were supported by all the committees, but we had a collection of people that came from all different walks of life that we put together and tried to complement each other's skills, and I could never, ever worked with a group of more dedicated and talented folks in my life, and I've got friendships forever with all of them, and I'm so thankful for that. The Indiana Sports Corporation, I begged Susan Williams to give us all her staff. Actually, I didn't beg. She offered, and then I said thank you. She gave us all her staff that 2-3 weeks of Super Bowl, and it was absolutely phenomenal. They've had lots of other events going on, and we knew we could count on them, and they took key roles and key positions in the Village and with the VIPs and the NFL that entire period. So, Susan, I think you're here today, too. Thank you so much for that. Okay. That was my last slide. How did I do, Steve? Ooh, I'm one. Good. Okay. This really, really was, before we take questions, I just want to say this one more time. This was a community-wide Super Bowl, and it's the first one that's ever happened because I've talked to all the host committee presidents from the last 20 Super Bowls, and they all can't believe how everybody pitched in for this here in Indiana. And it is an absolute blessing and a privilege for me to have been the center point of all that, from all the outreach and all the people wanting to help and wanting to make this a great thing for Indiana. So I want to thank all of you. I know everybody in this room was involved some way, even if it was your best friend said, gosh, the downtown traffic's horrible. You responded, it's only going to be that way for 10 days, no problem. You know, whatever your role was in it, thank you for that. Okay, I'm going to take questions.
Just a reminder, if you haven't already, go ahead and fill out your white cards, file them up here. We'll get them up here and organized. I'm going to kick one off here. You referenced the NFL with the attempt to do some things, but just in general, how was it working with the NFL?
You know, they were actually great. We worked with them on the bid in 2011 that we lost, and the same group in the 12 bid that we won, and then that same events group executing the Super Bowl, and the same group when the Colts won the Super Bowl and we had the NFL kickoff here. So the events department at the NFL really was just great, and I think they They really believed in us, and they really wanted us to be able to mold the Super Bowl to make it work well here. And I appreciated that very much. But I thought they were great. And the Commissioner Goodell was incredibly wonderful and nice with us, said wonderful things about us, about the city, not us as in me, but wonderful things about the community in every chance that he got. So we're appreciative of that.
Thanks. Sort of a similar theme. You referenced the state and the city, but how we really did this privately. But could you speak to how the city and the state, the public sector cooperated? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they fall in that category of really just unbelievable. All aspects of the city folks that were involved and the state folks that were all started with. Earl Goode was our point person for the state, and Chris Cotterill was our point person on the city. And they were absolutely phenomenal. And we could call them any time of day in the last 2-3 years, any night, and they would take our calls and they would help direct us. So, again, it made me appreciate living here even more so, talking to the other host committees who would call their chief of staff for the governor or for the city and not get a call back for 5 days. And, you know, that happens other places, but it never happened here. And I could not thank them enough for their involvement.
A couple here along the same theme. I'll try to consolidate them, but basically, what were some of the unexpected challenges, or if you have a regret, or were there some things that didn't quite work out the way you wanted, or if you could go back and do something differently?
Mm-hmm. You know, this is really odd for me to say, but 98% of everything was the plan that we executed, the plan we created, which doesn't usually happen. So that we did not have a lot of large course corrections during the week. During that 10 days, every morning our senior staff met, and then we went to meet with the NFL, and then we had a media briefing almost every day of the 10 days, and we really didn't change course that much. We had some tweaks here and there, particularly in the village on some of the pedestrian flow, where we could see that people were bunching up, and because the weather was so good, more and more people were coming downtown, and we kept sort of tweaking how people were entering and exiting the village. I think the only thing that I don't even want to call it a regret, the thing that we learned was that the zipline popularity, there was a real appetite for it here. We thought a lot of the visitors would have that appetite, but there was a huge appetite here. So the note in the file is that we would bring in more of their support staff and keep them up longer and potentially all night, even though I'm not sure that's a good idea, but later than we had it up.
You mentioned the attempted bribe. I think I heard that people were scalping their tickets, weren't they?
There's a bunch of tickets, yeah. We had some, yeah.
You really made it thin. Secondary market?
Yeah. We had some people out of town approach a number of our volunteers about buying their coats, buying their scarves, those kind of things. I would say for the overwhelming majority, most of the volunteers said no. We did have a few that said yes. I was leaving the game, and I was walking over by St. John's Church, and there was a guy in one of our leadership volunteer jackets. And I said, "Hey, where'd you get that?" He said, "Oh, the guy back here, I just bought it for $200. I said, "Okay, all right." So then we send out a big note and said, "Please don't sell your apparel to people."
Actually, here's a question about the economic development or the economic impact, and just wondering if you had any sort of ballpark or speculation.
You know, the majority of studies in the last 10 Super Bowls have been between $125 million and $400 million, and that is a huge swing. We're working with the ICBA to come up with a number, and it won't be ready till the end of March. But looking at the amount of shrimp that was sold and the other things, I think it was significant. You know, 4 years ago, we started identifying some industries that we thought were going to goods and services that would be good for the Super Bowl, and we thought people would get business. One of the things I would not have put on that list was yarn. And the city of Indianapolis was completely larger than Indianapolis. The state of Indiana and other states were completely sold out of our blue yarn that we were using. So the yarn shops here really loved us. And I'm from Maine, and my aunt lives in this little teeny, teeny coastal community called Damariscotta, Maine, if anyone's ever been there. And, okay, good. And she went into the knit store, and she tried to buy the yarn, and the woman that she buys her yarn from all the time was on the computer looking and looking and looking, and she said, "You know, there's some crazy person in Indianapolis buying up all the blue yarn all over the country." And she said, "Oh, yeah, it's my niece. Okay, when can you get me some?"
you said things weren't off limits, and this is sort of maybe the other side of the economic development, but there were some concern about price gouging for parking, hotel rooms. And then the other criticism that we heard locally was maybe that the focus on downtown didn't benefit some of the other areas of the city the way that people maybe thought.
For the hotels in the bid, there was a, I would guess I would call it a price gouging clause. So if you were part of the Super Bowl submission in the bid, you could not take your hotel rates and skyrocket them. There were a few of the smaller hotels that were not in the block, and I actually can't even remember which ones, that did put their rates up to $800 a night, $1,300 a night, but the feedback we got was they didn't sell any of them. So that they were out there with those prices, but that they actually weren't bought. So I don't know if you go back to those health, maybe Anthony, you can go track them down and ask them if they actually sold the rooms that they said were those prices, because we heard that they did not. The other thing is people called the last 2 years a lot and said, I'm going to rent my house. And our advice always was make sure you're doing it with your reputable real estate broker that you know, because this is a business and that doesn't have a good history for people. And I've just been seeing in the news the last couple of weeks where people put down deposits and so forth and didn't sell their homes, rent their homes. What was the second part of that?
Just about how the other areas of the town were affected, maybe not as well as the downtown.
We did try to push things out of downtown because we knew how crowded it was going to be, which is part of the reason we set up the 20 super celebration sites. I think the reports back from those, some went, like Zionsville was thrilled with theirs. They got a lot of people, and they did a lot of things that they felt drew people out there. Some of the other group areas, not quite so much. So it's definitely something we're going to study and figure out and get information back from those communities, because if we ever bid again, that'll be a key piece of information if we need to do a little bit different thing there.
This is something you and I were talking about over lunch, but there's been a lot of talk about the positive momentum that we've had in our community, and how do we harness that? How do we keep that going? And I think your thoughts on what we might do next, or how we might keep that going, I think would be somebody we'd ought to listen to.
Yeah, you know, we had so many great people on committees, and a lot of, you know, I'm 50 years old now, so I can say I'm no longer young, I guess. So I don't consider myself in the young category. But we had people under 50 that just amazing talent in this community, really have a lot to contribute, but hadn't really found a way to plug in here, and in many cases have moved here in the last couple years because of a job relocation here. And those people, we got to harness and use them in other ways. And Mark Miles and I have been talking about that a lot the last week. How do we really get those folks absorbed in our community and put all their great skills and talents to work? So it's not lost on us that that's critically important as we move forward. So we're going to be doing that.
All right. And then the last question everybody wants to know is, what's next for Allison? After the beach.
After the beach. I am going to go to a beach and take a little time off. I work for NBC Sports at the Olympics. This will be my fifth time doing that, and so I'll be going to London for July and part of August. And I won't be coming back to work full-time in the community until sometime in September, and so I haven't got my plans all laid out yet. That's what I'm going to do.
Thank you very much, Allison. Okay. Let's give her another round of applause.
Thank you.
Thanks again to our luncheon sponsor, the Indiana University Kelley School of Business Evening MBA program, for helping to make this afternoon possible.
You've been listening to Allison Melancton, sports coverage producer, strategist, and president of the 2012 Indianapolis Super Bowl Host Committee. Next month, our scheduled speaker is David Lenart, Washington Bureau Chief of the New York Times. The Economic Club of Indiana is a production of WFYI Radio in Indianapolis for Indiana Public Broadcasting Stations. Thank you for joining us. I'm Sharon Allseth.
Proliance Energy, providing natural gas to more than 1,200 commercial, industrial, utility, and municipal customers. Proliance, adding power to energy. Information is at proliance.com.